live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let's start with some baseball. Last night, the Yankees served up a couple of reminders now in that 7-2 win over Oakland in the wild card game. Reminder number one, they're pretty damn good. Number two, Aaron Judge, pretty damn good. Don't believe me? Check out the bottom of the first. Andrew McCutchen leads it off with a walk. Aaron Judge comes to the plate. Go ahead and roll it.
There's the 2-1 to Judge. Swung on. There it goes, deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A Judgian blast. Aaron Judge hit one over the auxiliary scoreboard, over the grandstand, into the bleachers. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
Yankees radio is so good. All rise. Here comes the Judge. Yeah, and why not? Because that was not a home run. That was a statement with a couple of exclamation points. Absolutely crushed it and crushed the A's in the process. You don't believe me? Check out this comment. A's pitcher, Fernando Rodney, quote, "Once I saw how Judge hit that ball, I thought to myself, this is over." It's an amazing statement for a guy like that to make. I mean, that's as honest gets. That's as real is. A guy admitting that he saw a home run in the bottom of the first inning of a wild card game and knew right then and there that their season was over. And he's not wrong. Now, don't get that twisted. Bob Melvin's team did not give up. They battled because that's what they do. And if you're thinking of taking a run at Melvin for his opener instead of starter approach, you can take that crap someplace else. Get that out of here. It didn't work last night, but it worked to get them to the postseason. It worked to get them 97 wins after losing just about every single starter who had ever put on an A's jersey. It worked to get them into the wild card spot after three straight losing seasons. They just ran into Aaron Judge, and Aaron Judge ran into a bad pitch. The A's opener, Liam Hendricks, had not allowed a home run since June. But Judge ended that streak, and then he ended that game pretty quickly. In fact, so much so, I think I've got to hit that thing one more time.
There's the 2-1 to Judge. Swung on. There it goes, deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A Judgian blast. Aaron Judge hit one over the auxiliary scoreboard, over the grandstand, into the bleachers. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
And the point that I have to make here is it's obviously not just about Judge. There's Luke Voit, too, a guy who the Yankees acquired in a deal with the Cards. And that deal was more focused on international slot money than it was Voit himself. And then my man went legend last night in the sixth when he broke it wide open with a two-run triple.
And it'll be a 3-2. Swung on, a high fly to right. Way back goes Piscotty on the track, at the wall, and it is off the wall, in play. Hicks scores. Stanton rounds third. He's coming home. The throw not in time. It's a triple for Voit. He just missed a three-run home run, but he hit a two-run triple, and the Yankees take a 5-0 lead.
Yeah, maybe the big fella thought it was gone. Maybe there was some loser trying to go Jeffrey Mayer, but it didn't matter. In fact, I'm not sure any of it mattered, especially when Voit turned it on and showed his speed and was able to score on a sac fly. All right, maybe speed was a stretch. My man's not exactly running down Vince Coleman anytime soon. But then again, Vince Coleman couldn't even run down a slow-moving tarp. God, that's one of my favorite things ever in the history of sports. USA Today going with that little pie graph and the pictorial about Vince Coleman getting trapped under the tarp. Good times. Look it up. Hawk, you'll enjoy that. Look that up. Do you know who Vince Coleman is? Anyway, if Voit keeps having moments like that, this Yankee team is going to be downright nasty. Because even after Chris Davis tried to pull the A's back into the game with that two-run shot, Giancarlo Stanton came to the plate, and then he left the yard in a hurry, and it was violent.
Here is the 1-2 to Giancarlo. Swung on and drilled to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is a foul home run. Just over the pole. I think it went actually over the top of the pole. Wow. a Stantonian home run.
I'm telling you, that was an absolute bomb. And a reminder that this crew can absolutely mash. 117.4 MPH, the hardest hit ball of the StatCast era. They're good. They're good. I'm telling you this because it feels like a lot of people get lost in the sauce when it comes to the Red Sox. Boston is great. You win 108 games in the regular season, you're a great team. But the Yankees still won 100, and you don't back your way into triple digits. They've got some arms, they can hit a little, and they can even mix in a little bit of defense, like when a Danny Hechavarria did this at third.
There's the 1-1 to Semien. Line grab by Echevarria. What a play. So they put Etch in for D, and he just flashed some leather. A great leap and a great catch.
You want to go down a rabbit hole? Go to YouTube and look that guy up and look at some of his defensive plays and lose an hour or more. Look, they're tough. The Yankees are tough. They're confident right now, and they're almost as confident as their fans who broke out that "We want Boston. We want Boston" chant. Yeah, well, you got him. You got him. But the fact is, not the Yankees are past that wild card round because they had to have that. That was a must win. Had to have that. Lose that game, and I don't care about the format. I don't care what a crapshooter it is. Lose that game, and that's 100 wins wasted. A lot of money wasted. They had to win that game. But now that they are past that round, fact of the matter is, as much as they have to deal with a team that won 108 games, the Red Sox have to deal with them as well. And we got the first postseason meeting between these two since 04. You think that's going to bring back any memories for Yankees fans and Red Sox fans? The first time both these teams have met in the postseason after winning 100 games in the regular season, tomorrow night, Fenway. Yeah, maybe the Red Sox have won their championships. Maybe it doesn't feel quite the way it used to. Maybe they don't hate each other the way they used to. Two things. They still hate each other, and everybody on the outside watching them hates them. It's going to be good. It's going to be really, really good. I'm fired up for it.
Here comes the judge.
The A's are a tremendous jungle team, but you got to tip your hat sometimes. And when Judge went deep the way he did early on, that was a early dagger. And the A's said it. They had an amazing year. Hats off to the A's. But now we get the big showdown. Yankees, Red Sox. Casey Hayward. Casey, nice to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
Doing great. Doing great. Let me just jump right into it. I was going to ask you about the San Francisco game, but because our time is short, let me ask you about Oakland going up against the Raiders in their offense. What is the biggest key to facing Derek Carr, and how do you go about stopping him?
Man, that offense has been on fire. A lot of people don't know that's one of the top offenses in the league. Like I said, a lot of people don't know that, but they've been on fire. He has a lot of weapons, and it starts with Marshawn. He's been running lights out. Seems like he's been getting better with time. Then they also got a lot of good receivers in Cooper, Nelson, Bryant, Cook, who's been playing lights out. They got a lot of good players on that offense, so we got to try to do a good job of containing those guys.
Casey Hayward is my guest. You know, Casey, the Raiders head coach John Gruden's been going on about how much he likes Derwin James and how much he wanted to draft him. I know you've been fired up about Derwin ever since he came over. What do you make of how he has shown up so far this season?
Oh, man, he's been playing lights out for us because you want him to come in and make it the thing he's been doing already. He's already becoming like a vocal guy already for us. And, you know, as a rookie, you don't normally let too many rookies talk, but we let him talk because his play speaks for itself, and he leads with his play. And he's been playing lights out for us. I feel like he's been playing probably the best ball on his defense for us.
Dude, if that rookie's allowed to talk, I know he's playing lights out. That's funny. Casey Hayward joining us. Listen, those who know have known for a long time just how good you are. But over the past couple of years, football fans around the country are catching on as well. Let me go back a little bit, though, really quickly. You're from Perry, Georgia. For those who have never been to Perry, how big is Perry and what was life like growing up there?
Perry, not too big. I think we got like 15,000 people. So it's probably not too big. But for me, small town, everybody pretty much know each other. The biggest thing that we got going on in Perry is probably our national fair. It's about to be going on in another week, so I'm going to miss it, but that's the biggest thing we got going on. But small town, everybody know each other, and we treat everybody like family.
All right, so I'm always fascinated to see when you come from a small town like that to make it as big as you have, you got to wonder about how you came up. Your mom, Tish, was your basketball coach growing up. What was she like as a coach, and what was it like playing for mom?
Man, she was a yeller.
She was a yeller.
Yeah, she was a yeller. So if I'm not doing something right, she gonna yell at me on the court. But it definitely was good. We got to bond with my mom as a coach. And after the basketball over, she back to being mom. So she left it on the court just like I leave it on the court. But it was good to be coached by my mom because she's a woman that a lot of women don't get to coach the men. So
Thursday night is a perfect night to check out my bookie. You can bet the Patriots and the Colts right now. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code Rome to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Casey Hayward joining us. You know, you did a mini documentary with the Chargers where you talked about your journey, and you did go back to Perry. So what was it like for you to go back to Perry and see where you came from? And I know that one of your childhood homes is all boarded up right now. What was it like to see that?
You know, I think it was dope to let people into, you know, my life and to be a little vulnerable for people to show my story, but to show people a little side of Perry. And to get Perry on the map a little bit, to show people a little about Perry and where I come from, and just a little background about me, I felt it was a need to open up and be a little vulnerable for people.
Hey, can I tell you, and that's what I wanted to do in a few minutes with you. I wanted to give them a little background. One thing about the defense before you go, you guys fell behind 14-0 against San Francisco last week. Nobody tripped on that. Nobody freaked out. You come back, and what about that defense? A big part of the defense is you got guys stepping up and making plays when they have to. How would you describe the attitude and approach of the Charger defense now?
Oh, no doubt. To get down 14-0, it just showed as a team how relentless we were. We didn't get down. We knew our offense would get going, and we knew we would get going on defense. But that's not the way we want to start. We'd rather start being up 14-0. So, We could do a better job. The first quarter of the season, you know, we started 2-2. Last year we was 0-4, so we definitely had a better start than what we started last year. So we can get going on defense, start playing a little better on defense. I think we got a chance to continue to grow and get better on defense. I think we got a chance to win a lot of games.
All right. So in terms of the game tonight, why don't we talk a little TNF? Big night at Foxborough, and not just because it's the return of Julian Edelman from a four-game PED suspension. In and above that, you have the Colts coming to town for the first time since Josh McDaniels hit the e-brake halfway to Indy.
The rivalry is back on.
First time since then, and the first time since Deflategate. There is that. So if you thought that Raja had a tough return to Foxborough, wait until the team that got Deflategate spinning round and round shows up. I hadn't heard rat with two T's in a while. So for the Chouds, it might as well be like an appetizer for Red Sox Yankees. Get ready to hear some good old-fashioned, throaty Boston hate. They will be coming for anybody repping the Colts. Guys who were there, guys who were not there, anybody and everybody. Andy Luck, Frank Reich, anybody associated with that franchise, even if they weren't there, anybody associated with them ratting the Patriots out for maybe, probably, allegedly, possibly, taking a couple of PSI out of a few footballs. Hell, Peyton Manning could be walking down the street tonight, minding his own business, and Pats fans will be coming for Pinky. And that dude has not smashed a Colts bucket onto his cranium since 2010. Doesn't matter. Hey, listen, there's nothing better than a good old-fashioned blood feud. And that's what we have right here. Yeah, I mean, certainly it has been ratcheted down from the level infinity that it was sitting at only a few years back. But talk about who are the guys in question. Don't think for a second that the Hood and TB12 do not want to hang half a hundy on the Colts. They hate each other. These two guys probably still hate each other's guts. I mean, the Hoodie and Tom, I mean. But you know the old saying, right? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Well, if the Pats feed a banged-up Colts squad into the wood chipper tonight, expect the Hood to lay a wet one on Tommy that is normally reserved for friends and family. And then the Hood will step to the mic post-game and act like it was no big thing, muttering something like, we're on to Cincinnati.
We're on to Cincinnati.
We're on to Seattle.
Seattle.
We're on to Kansas City. With the Pats getting ready for the arrival of Patty Big Gun, who is carrying his cannon into Foxborough next Sunday night. But that's next Sunday night. We're talking about tonight. And tonight, there's a reason why Vegas has this as a double-digit point spread. The Colts have seven guys on the inactive list. The Pats finally have their offense assembled. It's been nearly 2 years since Brady has had Gronk and Julian Edelman on the field at the same time. And with the early reports saying that Gronk is going to give it a go tonight, after he left last week's blowout with a rolled ankle, we should finally see what the Pats offense looks like at full strength. So, Colts fans, I know you're feeling good about your team, even if you are looking up at the rest of the AFC. I know your franchise quarterback is finally healthy. I know your head coach has got a brass set. I know you've got some young talent on that roster. But let me be straight. Tonight's going to get ugly because your squad dragged Tommy through the mud. And there are repercussions for that. So while I know that anything can happen in the NFL, when Tommy starts screaming, let's go, let's go to the lake, it's probably because he's got a cinder block and some rope waiting for your ankle. So wear this L like a shirt and move the hell on. And hope that you don't get scheduled against them anytime soon. I think it's going to go badly for the Colts. Who do you have? All right, we're joined right now by a journalist for ESPN. He is the host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show and Ariel and the Bad Guy. Very good friend of the program. Ariel, nice to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'm a friend of the program now.
You
Holy
smokes,
after just one appearance.
My man.
I'm honored.
I like the way you picked up on that. Well done.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's just jump right into it.
That is a huge feather in my cap.
You earned it, my man. You earned it. All right, so we're about 48 hours away from UFC 229. You're in Vegas right now. Set the scene for us. What is the mood like in that city and among fight fans as we get so close to this fight?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jim. The last time we spoke, if you recall, I was standing outside a Brooklyn courthouse, and Conor McGregor's future, just in general, seemed pretty grim at that point. So it's really nice 5 months later or so to be talking to you about an actual Conor McGregor sanctioned fight. And it feels as though there's a storm brewing here. You know, when Conor fights, it's unlike anything in MMA, unlike anything in MMA history. He just brings an amazing, loyal, boisterous, loud, partisan crowd with him. So yesterday we had the open workouts. And, you know, it wasn't the biggest turnout of all time. It's still a little early Wednesday. But today they're doing the press conference at 3 p.m. Pacific. And they've done one press conference before with them. That was 2 weeks ago in New York at Radio City. But that wasn't open to the public. And I thought that was a bit of a mistake. They had some security concerns. Okay, all well and good. But this one is open to the public. And Conor feeds off of that. And the brilliance of Conor is he doesn't just show up to press conferences waiting to be asked questions. He shows up with information, with research, with material, and he's got dirt on all his opponents. So I'm really curious to see how he feeds off the crowd, what he has in store for Khabib. It's going to be a great scene.
We're talking to Ariel Helwani, and we're getting ready for UFC 229. All right, so if you were a fighter and you had been out of the cage for 2 years, would you make Khabib your first fight back? I mean, just how dangerous is this for Conor?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. Of course, he did have the Mayweather fight last year, so it's not like he's just been sitting around, but I get your point. At the end of the day, and I said this on the Monday after the Brooklyn incident, he had no choice. You can't fly across the pond and essentially attack someone in a bus and then not take that fight. Once you do that, you got to take this fight. And a lot of people for the longest time thought, Khabib's strength is his wrestling, and that's Conor's weakness, and his cardio is Khabib's strength, and that's Conor's you know, somewhat weakness as well. He's never going to take this fight. But after he did what he did in Brooklyn, he had to take the fight. And I have a theory, Jim, that when Khabib fought his last fight in Brooklyn at UFC 223, he stayed on the feet for the majority of the fight, and it wasn't all that impressive. He said afterwards, oh, he was watching Muhammad Ali videos, and he was inspired, and he wanted to show off his striking. But my theory, Jim, is that he was doing a little old rope-a-dope, that he was trying to bait Conor into taking the fight. And yesterday, Conor even said that he watched that fight, and he wanted to throw a chair at the TV because he was so disgusted at how bad of a striker Khabib was. I think that he was playing possum. He was trying to tell Conor, look, this is what you're going to get when you fight me, a stiff sort of, you know, kind of like mediocre striker, and he was trying to get him to accept the fight. And if that is in fact true, A, he's a genius, and B, it works.
Ariel Helwani joining us. That's a really interesting point, I think. Now, when you've been around and spent time with Khabib over the years, part of his mystique and his intimidation is that he's so stoic. Does he seem stoic to you this week, or does it feel like this fight is different and is personal to him?
Tremendous question, because he has shown some signs of being a little bit different this time around. You're 100% right. Stoic, unflappable, you know, the prototypical Russian fighter, right? I mean, he doesn't really let his emotions come into play. But on Monday, he was on my show, and I appreciate the plug. Thank you. He told me this is personal, and it's personal because Conor has talked about not only him, but his father, who has always been, you know, off limits for anyone. I mean, he holds his father in the highest regard. Khabib still lives at home with his parents, and he has a wife and two children. But the Dagestani culture says that the youngest child still stays at home. That's how much his family means to him. And not only that, Conor talked about Dagestan and Chechnya and their relationship. He talked about Vladimir Putin, who is not, you know, a favorite leader among the Dagestani people. And he really went there. And so, yeah, he admitted that it was personal. I'm not surprised that it is personal, but I'm surprised that he actually admitted it. And then yesterday at the open workouts, Khabib started talking about Conor's grandfather and saying that he was a turncoat for the Irish people, and then he fought on the British side. And he went into this like whole history lesson. I was like, wow, clearly a nerve has been struck here, and he's now looking into Conor's family history, and that's not like Khabib. So I'm really curious to see come Saturday when the lights are on. Remember, Khabib has only main evented one show, and he's never main evented on a platform in a scene like this before. Does he fight like Jose Aldo fought? Does he fight like Eddie Alvarez fought when they fought Conor, which is not unlike themselves? Does he get off his game? Does he get too emotional? Because that would be a big problem. That would be his undoing if he lets all of this get to him.
These guys are absolutely savage, both these guys. Ariel Helwani, I mean, what's being said in this fight? I've heard a lot of things leading up to fights, but this is absolutely savage. Now, much of the focus has been on whether or not it's personal for Khabib, but Ariel, you have a story from this summer when you and Conor spoke in the lobby of a hotel. What was the setting for that conversation, and what did Conor tell you?
So, Jim, I was leaving my show late July, a few days after his last court hearing, and I saw a video of him working out in Central Park, and I was like, oh, that's kind of where I am. And I think I knew where he was staying. So I just went to a hotel and stayed in the lobby for 5 hours, hoping that at some point I would see him, because I wanted to talk to him. It had been a while since I talked to him. He's a lot harder to get in touch with these days. Lo and behold, at around 11:30 p.m. Eastern time, he comes down with a camera crew following him, and we chat, and we have a nice little, you know, catch-up. And it was all well and good, and it was nice to talk to him. And then he tells his crew to stop filming, and he gets really, really close to me. And he says to me, and I will never forget this, for as long as I live, the look on his face, he said to me, they have no idea. They have no idea, Ariel, what is coming. They think I'm joking. They think I'm not taking this seriously. They have never seen anything like this before. They have no idea what's coming. I was like, wow, that was the first time that I realized this is no joke. Like, he is taking this seriously. Anyone who thinks that he's out there partying, anyone who's thinking that he's taking Khabib lightly, that he's just out for another payday, they are sorely mistaken. This is super personal for Conor. And then he sort of doubled down on that on Monday when he was on my program, when he said, this is not over on October 6th. You know, in sports and combat sports, they say the fight will be over, we'll hug it out. He says October 7th, October 8th, October 9th, they need to sleep with one eye open. I am not going to forget what they did to my friend. I'm not going to forget what they have said about me. This does not end after I beat him on October 6th. You never hear that sort of thing. So for Conor as well, this is extremely personal. And I think what makes this so great, Jim, is that the belt is an afterthought. In the UFC, the belt always makes fights bigger. It raises the stakes. No one is talking about the belt going into this fight because this fight is so personal.
Ariel Helwani is my guest. Extremely personal for both sides. That's very apparent. Bottom line, styles make fights. They have different styles. If you had to make a pick, how do you see the fight going?
So, you know, Jim, I love you, but fighters are very sensitive. And every time I make a pick, they come back at me and they say, you didn't believe in me. You didn't, blah, 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 blah. So I will abstain from making a pick because I know your show is listened to and watched by the world. But I will tell you this. If you looked into a crystal ball and watched this fight already and told me that the fight ended in the fourth or fifth round and you told me to guess who won the fight, I would say that Khabib won the fight. The later this fight goes, it's probably in his favor. And, of course, if it's a fight that ends up on the ground predominantly, it's definitely in his favor. If you told me you've seen the fight and it ended in the first or second, who wins? I say it's Conor's fight to win. Stays standing. He knocks him out early. So it just it's almost a very cut-and-dry fight to sort of foresee. It just comes down to who is able to do what he wants to do in there. It's the classic striker versus wrestler matchup. Who's able to keep the fight standing? Who's able to keep the fight on the ground? If you see it going one way with the fight remaining standing or going to the ground, you'll probably have a good sense of how this fight is going to go.
The only thing more predictable than Jon Gruden going Jon Gruden is Nick Saban going Nick Saban. And at this point, I'm not even sure which guy's more tired. Gruden exploded out of the blocks and has gotten to the point in only a matter of weeks. Like, I'm already sick of this guy. I'm already tired of his act. Saban, on the other hand, has been grinding it out 3 yards in a cloud of dust for years, managing to find new things to complain about every single week. Except it's never a new thing. It's always the same tired, reheated complaints from years ago. I mean, at this point, Nick Saban may as well just lug a record player up to the podium, drop the needle down, and just play from his greatest hits of yesteryear. Because stop me if you've heard this one before, but Nick Saban is, quote, disappointed about the student attendance at the Louisiana Lafayette game.
So we say I was a little disappointed that there weren't more students at the last game.
A little disappointed that there weren't more students at the last game. Yeah, I can honestly say I'm a little disappointed that you're still coming with that same lame-ass material. I mean, is it that time of year already? I can't believe it's already October. And I can't believe it's already Nick Saban complaining about attendance season. It seems like just yesterday it was Nick Saban complaining about questions about his two quarterbacks season. I mean, damn, time flies. But back to the complaints about his attendance. Nick, you played Louisiana Lafayette at 11 a.m. on Parents' Weekend. Sorry if the students are not beating down the doors to get to a 6-touchdown blowout of a 1-win Raging Cajuns team. Maybe if it wasn't at 11 o'clock in the morning, maybe if you scheduled somebody other than the Raging Cajuns, things might have been different. But then again, according to Saban, things used to be different.
You know, when I first came here, you used to play that tradition thing up there, and everybody was cheering and excited and happy, and there was great spirit. All right, now they don't even cheer. They introduce our players, nobody even cheers. So, I don't know, maybe there's something else somebody ought to talk about. Maybe I shouldn't talk about it. Maybe I already talked about more than I should.
Yeah, let me take the last part of that first. Yes, you're right. You've talked about that way more than you should. I'm not sure what's worse. This guy's tired, grumpy old man act where he complains about everything. Or those dumbasses who think it's funny or cute that he's like this curmudgeon. Oh, that Nick Saban, he just loves to win. Oh, man, he's all about winning. He loves to complain and he loves to win. Dude, he's the best. Actually, he's not. Man, just stop, both of you. Because I'm not even sure that Saban himself believes half the things that he's complaining about. Because if he did, he'd probably take the time to freshen up his material. But he hasn't. He's only re-releasing old tracks and then counting them as a new album. He's already going to old saws like, the players work too hard.
Look, our players work too hard, and they deserve to have everything and people supporting them in every way.
Yeah, it sounds awful lot like that 2013 smash hit. I talk about the players playing for 60 minutes of the game and competing for 60 minutes of the game. That, of course, followed up his smash single, You Should Stay There and Support the Team for the Game. And they followed that up with that 2013 jam that I like to bump. Maybe if you're not interested in doing that, you should let somebody else go who would like to go, because I have a lot of people who want to go. Sounds a hell of a lot like his track from this past week.
If I don't want to come to the games, I don't have to come, but I'm sure there's enough people around here to like to go to the games and would like for them to come too, because they support the players.
I mean, my man's not even bothering to do any kind of remix at this point. I mean, come on, Nick. Hit that thing with an air horn. Or at least a fresh background track. I mean, maybe I'd be into it. Maybe if you change up a little bit. And then maybe your students would actually start showing up. Even better, quit lecturing fans on when and how they should attend your games. How about this? How about people can come to the games or not come to the games as they please, and they don't need you whining about it? How about they spend their time and their money any damn well they please? Yeah, I'm sorry if your feelings were hurt by fans either not coming or leaving early. But I don't think they were. That's the thing. I don't think they were. I don't think you give a damn. I don't think you're that concerned about the fans showing up late for the raging Cajuns. I think somehow you're just trying to use this as a way to motivate your players. And I think that I'm getting pretty tired of it. And I think deep down, Nick, I think you're pretty tired of it. Just admit it. You can't believe that stuff, really. You keep going to it over and over and over again. You don't really believe that stuff. You just know everybody's tired of that stuff. Legitimately. Dodgers, Braves. Brewers, Rocks. Yankees, Sox. Hawk, LinkedIn. Take any of these matchups. Who do you like? Hey, watch that camera, bro. We have these cameras that kind of move around. If you watch this show on CBS Sports Network, the cameras move around on a track. The cameras, if you look at them, well, you can't see them, but if you look at them, they've got yellow tape around them so you don't walk into them. You know, kind of like sliding glass doors that have decals on them so you don't walk into them. Every one of us have walked into that camera at least once. You don't see the yellow tape until you're lying on your back looking up at it. And quick email. Dear Jumpman, is there anything more tired than old man Saban bitching and moaning about everything? This time it's about the home attendance against superpower Louisiana Lafayette. Who really wants to watch that massacre? Schedule another Power 5 opponent to make it interesting. Not surprising, coming from a team that could beat everyone but still schedules 4 true away games and 8 home games. War Javier's in Crystal Cove. War Javi's at John Wayne Airport. Gabe in Newport Beach. Spoken as somebody in the 949. This is my point. He just echoed what I said. Saban literally is complaining about the students' attendance against Louisiana Lafayette. Are you kidding? 11 o'clock, parents' weekend, in a 6-touchdown blowout, but they didn't get there early enough nor have the right level of energy for Nick. Nick, I know you don't believe that. I know you don't believe that. Willie McGinnis is my guest. Willie, good morning. Good to have you. How you doing, bud?
Jim, man, it's always a pleasure. How you doing, brother?
Willie, I'm doing great. So good to hear your voice. Nice to have you back. Lots to get to, so let me jump right in. You've got the Colts, and they're going to Foxborough to take on New England tonight. When I say Colts, Patriots, Willie, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you?
The big-time rivalries we had, man, with Peyton Manning and those offenses and their organization versus us. Plays always coming down to some type of chess move or adjustment or big play determining who was going to have home field throughout the playoffs or wherever, whatever the storyline was for that week. I just remember they wasn't in our division anymore, but they seemed to be on our schedule every single year. Just the excitement, getting ready for those games, man. It was some of the best rivalries I ever played in.
Willie McGinnis is my guest. You know, knowing the history also of the two teams, the way you lay that out, and then, Willie, you've got the connection, of course, with Deflategate. How do you think the Patriot fans are going to respond to the Colts tonight?
Well, I think that's a thing in the past, but because the Colts did have something to do with that, they're not going to mind if the score is lopsided. If it's lopsided, man, the fans won't mind at all. But I guess for the fans, that might be a little added motivation for us, the players. They're seeing it as another game. You know, they talk about revenge games and all that stuff, but this team is just trying to get back on track, the Patriots, and get things moving. They're trying to get on the winning side of things.
And I'm sure the Colts are trying to do the same.
William McGinnis is my guest. So they're trying to get back on track. You've got the possibility that Rob Gronkowski does go tonight and Julian Edelman as well. Willie, how big of a difference does it make for the New England offense if you get both these guys together and that offense back together?
Well, you're trying to gel and you're trying to get everything adjusted and get everybody on at the same time. We haven't seen this offense like that since Edelman's been out on suspension and injury. So to get him back, man, he'd be definitely a huge boost for the offense. And having Gronk out there, and, you know, they got Josh Gordon. They're trying to get him acclimated to the system. Philip Dorsett is starting to get better and find his way. And Cordarrelle Patterson is slowly but surely finding his role. So the offense is going to be exciting, man. When it's all together, everything's firing on every cylinder, Jim, it'll be exciting to see what they can do, man. And they're going to need it because there's some good offenses out there. You're going to have to score points, it looks like, you know, to go to the playoffs and to the next level. And there's some good defenses, so I'm excited.
William McGinnis joining us. Willie, one thought about Josh Gordon. He made his debut on Sunday. What did you make of his first appearance for the Pats, and how do you think that role is going to grow in the offense over the course of the season?
Oh, it's going to be huge. I mean, we're getting a small sample size now. I think he had like 4 or 5 plays, not much. It takes a while to digest this playbook and understand the nuances to the offense and make those in-game adjustments and to be on the same page with Brady, because he can change things at the snap of a finger or a signal, for that matter. So it's going to take some time to see him get acclimated and get him comfortable in the system. But once he does, wow, look out.
Thursday Night Football, Patriots, Colts, so we'll talk about that in – actually, we'll watch that and cover that. Willie, I want to get you to jump over to Earl Thomas for a minute, if I could. Knowing everything that you know about what he poured into the Seahawks, what did you think when you saw him get hurt and flip off the sideline, being carted off the field? And do you think that he deserved better than what they gave him?
Well, first of all, I would say it was out of pure frustration. I know Earl's he's a great leader, man. His work ethic, great example for a lot of young kids, you know, and guys in the league for how to play the game and how to prepare for it. And I wouldn't judge him off of that one instance, although I would say, you know, it wasn't good, but I understand it. He has poured a lot into that organization, but I think they kind of knew before the season that a deal wasn't going to get done, or maybe possibly they wasn't going to go forward with an extension or a deal. And knowing that as a player, you got to take precaution. You got to do what's best for you. And knowing that as an organization, you want your best players out there on the field. But Earl Thomas's worst nightmare came true. He was out there for his teammates. He was trying to do the right thing. He was playing his butt off. And the injury happened without a contract in place, without any future guaranteed, you know, money or anything in place. So now we see the result after the game, you know, or when he's getting carted out of the frustration. I will say it's two sides of it. Does he deserve a contract? Has he outplayed his former deal? Is he one of the best in the league? Of course he is. I mean, there's no question about that. But if you're trying to hit the refresh button in Seattle and he's not part of that future and going forward and all those different things, and you got him for a year, do you want him out on the field? Hell yeah, you want him out on the field. He makes a difference. He had 2 interceptions in the game. He's a playmaker. So it's a tough situation for both sides. I just hope they have a good conversation in-house. They work this thing out. And, you know, although the Seahawks probably won't give him the deal that he's wanted, maybe they do, who knows, some team in the NFL is going to invest in him and understand what he brings to a locker room and the impact he has in the game.
William McGinnis is my guest. You said you hope they have a good conversation. William, my guy, Trevor Price, who I started to do a podcast with, said, I'm telling you, he will never step one foot back in that facility ever again. So I hope you're right. I hope they have a good conversation, but I can see where maybe he would never do that either.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I think that you got to remember, too, it's a business. You know, we talk about family and loyalty and all those different things, but it's also a business for both sides. You know,
sure.
He's a business. He's a walk-in business, and they got a business to run.
And I think it's important they do have a conversation. He did. He's done a lot for that franchise and for that team. And he's been rewarded for it. But, I mean, he's poured a lot of, you know, hard work, sweat, and tears. But going forward, you know, there's things they could do, too. You know, they could put the tag on him and trade him or do whatever. So there is business decisions that need to be made outside of this year going forward. And I'm sure they're going to do what's best for him and his future.
Willie, I'm pumped for you. Friday night, Willie McGinnis, The Football Life, premieres at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. What's it like to have a Football Life done on you? It's a great show. And there's a very select fraternity of guys who get that opportunity. What's it like to have Football Life done?
It's amazing, man. I didn't know. I'm a big fan of the show myself, Jim. And I didn't know how much work they put into it. We shot for months to put together a snapshot and cut and paste of my life and football journey and off the field journey in 1 hour. They did an amazing job. The resources that they put around their show, how intricate they are in gathering and collecting information and having interviews and the footage they grab to piece it all together. It's special, man. And to think a kid from Long Beach who, you know, came the hard way and did everything and came up and nobody thought, you know, outside the people that were around me and family and friends, that it could get to this, man. It's just special, and it's definitely an honor.
Willie McGinnis, my guest. Will, you and I have talked about this. You know, my wife Janet is from Long Beach. You guys went to the same high school, so I know about that pride. I know what it's like. We talk about it all the time. Her family, her mother lives in the same house 50 years now. You know, what was it like on the east side of Long Beach? For those who do not know, what was that like, and what's it take to come from the east side of Long Beach, go to USC, and become a top five pick in the NFL?
Well, you know, it's an adverse situation, man. You're growing up in the inner city, and there's a lot of trials and tribulations and hurdles you got to get through. And, you know, there were a lot of great athletes, some probably better than me, that could have been getting the Football Life done and going into the Hall of Fame and playing in the NFL for years, but they were sidetracked by the streets and the things that go on in the streets. And like I say in my story, you know, I didn't know I was going to make it out until I actually made it out. It's a blessing. And I had the right people around me, made some good decisions, didn't always make good decisions, but things worked out. And, you know, the city, it builds you for life, and it prepares you, and it gets you ready for anything, you know, that you're going to go through or face, you know, in the future. And being able to take that and then take the next step and go to USC, a prestigious university, and be a part of that Trojan family and play there, where my parents were able to come and watch me play and be local. And then from there, take it to the next level, man. I could just say I have no complaints in life and football or anything I did. I've done everything I wanted to do in football, and to be able to create a platform, to be able to go back and tell young kids my story and be able to support and give back and create resources for them to help them with their dreams and aspirations. You know, I've done what I dreamed about doing, and that's all I can ask for. And the dream continues, Jim, you know, being in the media, I'm allowed to continue to talk about football, and people are interested in what I'm saying, and to be around it and to get paid to talk about something you love so much, and having another life with the network, the NFL network, and having that opportunity, man. I have no complaints, man. I'm a happy camper.
Willie, I was going to make the point. You didn't have an amazing football life. You're having an amazing football life. And I want to reference something else. It keeps coming up in the Football Life is your leadership. Bill Belichick says nobody wanted to take you on. Let me ask you this. That leadership quality, is it something you were born with, or is it something that you learned and worked on as you grew up?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think it was instilled with me by my father and my family, something I learned throughout the way, watching other people come before me, guys that I studied, guys that I watched and liked in the football world, and, you know, learning from the different coaches with Parcells and Pete and Belichick, of course, and all the coaches that came into my life teaching me the way the game is supposed to be played and how you know, decision making and preparing and all that. And then watching other guys that were veterans when I came into a locker room, the work ethic, how they led. And you know, the biggest thing for me was the fear of failing, Jim, not wanting to go back and be another statistic or be in the neighborhood telling what could have happened, what should have happened, just not wanting to fail. So working my ass off to make sure I never put myself in that situation and doing everything in my power not to. So there's a lot of things that factor into it, and I can't pinpoint one, but I think the culmination of everything just kind of gave me that extra energy and push.
Well, one last thing. I think that if you're going to lead like that, you got to make plays. You got to make big plays. Tom Brady said of you, quote, "He made some of the biggest plays this organization has ever made," end quote. What's it mean to you to hear that from Brady?
Well, it means a lot because he's been the most consistent playmaker for the last 19 years, man. And, you know, he's my brother, and he came into a culture that was created by us and jumped right in, took everything, absorbed it, digested it, and took it to a whole nother level times 10 to where he is now. So, you know, to see him, to hear him say that is a mutual respect between, you know, two brothers, and we battled and we played and we worked and we pushed each other. And yeah, I think if you're going to lead, you gotta make plays. You can't just talk about it. You can't have the best speeches or rah-rahs and get guys pumped up, and then you go out there and you play terrible. You got to make plays, and the team has to count on you. Your teammates especially got to believe in you and trust in you. And if you're doing that, then that, I think that's the start right there. You hit it on, you hit a home run with that. You got to make plays to even put yourself in that position.
Colts, Patriots tonight, and William McGinnis, A Football Life. It premieres Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. It re-airs Friday at 12 midnight, Saturday at 10 p.m. Eastern. You know, Willie, I feel like I've been watching this Football Life for so many years, for you dating all the way back to going to USC, but they'll knock this thing out after the months of work and editing and sit-downs and interviews. It's all going to come together. It's like a big, big preview, and I can't wait to see that Friday night. Willie, you earned it. Congratulations, and it's going to be a great thing to see.
I appreciate it, Jim. And man, I will say, like I always say, I appreciate all you've done for me. You've been there the whole ride since the birth of this thing. So I appreciate you and your honesty and your commentary and all the things you've done for the sport and sports, for that matter. And you've been doing it a long time, man. You're one of the best. So appreciate you, and thanks for having me.
Cal in Vegas. Hey, Cal, have you ripped that dude's beard off his face yet and made him eat it?
And Jim, I'll whip Connor's ass. I told you years ago that this guy is overrated. Dude got paid to take a beating from Floyd Mayweather. I could have done that, but that's not the reason I called. The reason I called is because a bunch of morons on Twitter think I try to sound like Rick in Buffalo. That's impossible, because Rick is a derivative of me. Rick, you ain't nothing but a Cal in Vegas wannabe. Rick, since I'm your influence, let me give you some advice. From now on, call your local show, because nobody outside of Buffalo gives a rip about the Bills. I mean, you can call your local show, talk about going to the Bills game, fornicating in the parking lot, and throwing rubber dongas on the field. I mean, you people stink when you wash. And Rick, pump the brakes on Josh Allen. Josh Allen sucked in college. Dude struggled in the mighty Mountain West Conference. I mean, you had this guy headed to Canton after one game. That's because you have the brains of a piss ant. Jim, before I take off, I have one more thing to say. You tell that little nerd, Alvin, to do his job and give me a golden ticket, for crying out loud. I'm a legitimate smack-off competitor. Unlike bags like Fad in L.A. and Jeff Passan. That's why you guys reset my call from a couple years ago about 500 times. Believe me, there's a lot more where that came from. Word to your mother.
That's Cal in Vegas. In L.A., Fat. Hey, Fat, what's up?
That's right, Fat in L.A. right here, baby. From Laos to Laguna, from Newport to Nicaragua, you're welcome. The eye candy is going in the mat in L.A. montage. As far as my man, Cal, have you taken a look at this dude's 8x10? He looks like the illegitimate son of Carly Simon and Howdy Doody. Cal, dude, step off, bruh, because you know what? You got no level of slack that will get to me. The slap that you bring is about as weak as Phil Micklefat rubbing his belly, dude. Cut it out, Cal. I didn't even call to get up on you, but since you want to try to step to me, it's all good, Calista. We will get it on. Hey, first off, when you are...
That's enough. All right, I've had enough of all of it.
You don't like that color.
I don't like that color.
First of all, don't call a dude by a woman's name and think that's cool or funny. I would never do that.
Good night now!